Hey, everybody. Welcome. Got a couple people who emailed me said they couldn't make it, so we can jump in. David, I got your email. Thanks for sending that along. I can definitely help you with your question. So you sent off the email. Have you started having the interviews? You might be muted.
Yeah. So we are in the process of getting those scheduled now.
Okay. All right. Got it. You haven't had any yet.
Not yet.
Okay. Great. And you were asking me about how to hold staff accountable. Walk me through a little bit what specifically you're dealing with, and that'll help me know. You know, there's lots of different ways to do it, but it depends on what it is and what's happening or not happening that should be happening.
So, I guess this is kind of a roundabout question in that I'm really looking at my office manager being able to hold people accountable without them feeling like she's overbearing or like she's being a dictator or like she's trying to bribe them. And I was kind of trying to think of, okay, well, maybe you should do this, Susan. And I haven't come up with an answer. So I'm kind of asking for her benefit because she actually is the day-to-day interaction with the staff. So, for example, a particular staff person is supposed to schedule procedures and follow up with the patient to make sure that all the details are coordinated and not have a situation where a patient shows up and it's not scheduled correctly or there's things that are missing in the chart. So it's attention to details. And that's for that particular person. Another particular person, we need to have these website information tallied up and submitted so that we can use this information to help us going forward. And okay, I give the assignment on a Monday and, you know, Wednesday, it's still not done. And how do I get them to, you know, we asked for this to be done earlier in the week and it's now Wednesday, where are we on it? And what can we do to help you get this going along? And I see both sides of the coin as far as the staff, you know, not meeting their deadlines. And also, how can Susan do this without people feeling like she's being too overbearing?
Yeah, sure. So a couple of things I'd say. So module three has a whole lot of stuff in it about how to make sure that people do the work you want them to do. There are always and only five reasons people don't perform. And what I'll do is in that module, I talk about the first, it's called ARISE, and it's an acronym. The first letter A stands for, have you made the person aware of what winning looks like? And as part of that, have you also prioritized their other tasks? And have you confirmed that they understand what you understand? It's very, very common to assign somebody a task and for them to not understand it the way you do, or to not understand how important it is or how urgent it is. And so that's a really important part of managing people, is making it really clear, here's what winning looks like, here's what we need, here's what we want, and here's how important it is. And then the last step is, you say, what's your understanding of what I just asked you for? Or can you send me a quick note when you get a chance, an email, for example, letting me know your understanding of this? And very often what happens is people will send a note that is not what you meant. And it's just a normal part of, you know, that. So now let's assume you've done A properly. Now you have to look at RISE. These are the four things. So the first one is really you, the manager, or her, the manager in this case. These are the employee. So R stands for resourcing. Do they have the proper resources to do the job you've asked? Maybe it's a technology. Maybe it's no bandwidth. Maybe it's no budget. So have they been resourced to do it? I is, are they inexperienced in some meaningful way? Do they just not have enough cycles to be able to benchmark proper workflow? Are they inexperienced? S is skills. Are they missing any real skills that are required to do this task? And the last one is engagement. Engagement is, are they motivated? Are they going through a divorce? Is there a sickness in the family? Are their feelings hurt that somebody didn't, you know, spoke to them in a way they didn't want to be spoken to? Those are all the kinds of things that drive whether or not people do what you want them to do. And so when you understand which reason it is, you can then design the proper intervention. So one consideration for you, maybe after this 360 is completed, is a possibility would be actually enroll Susan in this program, because she's doing more of the active management and some of those really hard skills that it sounds like she may not have. And this program and the coaching calls would give her that. So I'm not trying to sell you something extra, but I do think as you've come to me, a lot of your questions really are around how people experience her. And I think it's absolutely right for it to start with you to understand what's going on, to really get clear. Once I'm clear on what's really going on, it's possible that enrolling in the program is the best thing for her. It's possible that something else is going to be more helpful. Okay. I just want to flag that for you. As I'm hearing you talk, that's the thing that came to my mind.
Yeah, so I'm currently on the last chapter of module 2. So I start module 3 tomorrow.
Yeah, great. No problem at all. So as I said, you know, I'll guide you through the program. It's not like you have to get through all of the material, but it's good that you're kind of working your way through it. So, I mean, I think that's the kind of the first question, but even with all that, what I would say is, you know, if you know that there's an employee who's not doing what you want them to do or not doing what she wants them to do, it's really great to just, as part of that 360, ask, you know, how are things going? How do you feel like you're doing here? How do you feel like Susan is? If they're like, well, she's a micromanager, great. Give me some specific examples of micromanaging. And then if they name the thing they've been asked to do and they're like, I don't know why she cares about it, it's not that important, and I've got all these other important things to do, then you have great data where it's like the person doesn't understand how important it is. And then it's Susan's job to make that clear to them. This matters more than that. So anyway, module 4 will unlock a lot of that stuff for you, and you'll begin to think in new ways about how to hold people accountable. The other way to hold people accountable is really connected to meeting protocols. So in module 4, there's a protocol on how to have better meetings, which builds in a kind of a regular accountability that's not personal, that all of us are held accountable to this meeting protocol. So I'm not sure how relevant it is for your practice or your operations. So we'd have to, you know, maybe you'd have to get to that part of the module and then you can see and go, hey, Shane, I'm curious about how what you said here translates to my context, and I can help you translate that into your situation.
Okay.
So those are the two things I'd recommend.
All right.
Useful, helpful. You want to keep talking or you feel like you have?
Oh, I think that's very good. Okay. You know, I'm kind of the get information together, let it absorb, and then act on it. So
great. Awesome. Okay. Thanks for your question. All right. Who is up next? I see Reese was able to make it. That's great. I got your note, Reese. Who else would like to chat? Ed, what's the latest? You're next here on my Hollywood Squares.
Oh, I have great timing, Shane. I have had something on my mind. I intended to email you and didn't, but I could use your viewpoints on a tough conversation that I'm going to have. How to unpack this? So it has to do with, I have a business partner, and the business pre-pandemic did well. And in fact, right up to 2019, quite well, it just kept growing. And then pandemic happened, and now we're clawing our way back. And it's been in fits and starts. So we've had a string of months where, you know, our revenue is not what it used to be. And, you know, right at profitability, you know. And so the other piece of background information is that I hired a new director about a year ago. And so, you know, my partner, she owns 20%, I own 80%. She also, you know, contributes to the business in that, you know, sometimes she wears the hat of director, you know, comes in a day or two a week. I sometimes wear the director's hat. It's that when I say director, it's the person who is client facing or prospect facing and engages in conferences of people who either are potentially interested in our services or are already clients. And we're talking about how our service is going and so forth. Any rate, she comes to me and says, you know, do we want to keep this director? You know, where's the bacon? You know, where's the sales, essentially? You know, and she said, I realize you have to allow somebody to learn the ropes and give them the opportunity to succeed. And we're coming out of a pandemic. And she says, what about this other employee who is an office manager / assistant director? And I said, well, I just don't think she is cut out for a director, and for these reasons. And one of which is we created this role of assistant director, and I felt like she never really stepped up, and it could entirely, and probably at least in part, be I did not coach her in a way that had her step up in how we expected. The director does not feel like she's a productive employee. So the current director just tells me, you know, she's lackadaisical in her words. And I did hire another office manager. So the idea was I'd have somebody to handle admin tasks. I'd have this person who told me she wanted to be assistant director, support our director, and we could be more productive that way. At any rate, my director told me last week, you know, can I tell you something in confidence? And I said, well, yes, but you got to understand, you know, if this is really business affecting, I can't guarantee you, you know, I can hold this confidence. She said, well, your office manager is going to give her 2-week notice. And she's talked, oh, by the way, she's spoken with your partner. And there's one piece I did leave out of that is when my business partner spoke with me and said, you know, what about this office manager? And maybe I need to give names. So it just, if you can keep track of the care. What's that? Okay.
My name's help.
Okay. You know, what about, you know, if we hire Carrie to be the director, you know, this other director, I mean, she's seems to be hardworking, but we're really not getting the level of revenue that we would expect. And I, you know, I went over the reasons why I'm not sure she's a good fit. And I said, by the way, have you spoken with Carrie about this? And I had in mind, you know, from a previous meeting here, or this whole thing about avoid skip stepping, that, you know, there's a line of communication. And she said, oh, no, that would be unprofessional. I would never do that. And clearly she did, you know. So, yeah, I had the meeting with Carrie where she, you know, presented to me. The way she presented it was, she said, I have a choice, you know, I have this other position. And I you know, I think my business partner, Mona, kind of coached her around how to present this. But it was an odd situation because...
I'm still not clear. How do you know that your business partner had talked to her?
Because my director told me. So Carrie spoke to my director and said, hey, I've spoken to Mona. You know, don't tell Ed. Okay. And when I had the meeting with Carrie, it was presented like I asked her, so have you spoken to our director, Mary, about this? She said, no. And it was like, I was actually at this experience. I'm looking at the small calendar on the desk where it says Carrie's last day and looking at Carrie and said, have you spoken to the director, the calendar that the director wrote Carrie's last day, and looking her in the eye. And I said, are you sure? I mean, it would make sense that you might confide in Mary. No, I'll let you do that. You know,
wait, so Mary's the director.
Mary's the director. Yes.
Okay. And Carrie is the office manager.
Office manager.
And your business partner is?
Her name is Mona.
And so Mona spoke with Carrie about possibly taking this role.
Correct.
When she talked to Carrie, she said, don't tell Ed. And
must have said that.
Got it. And then when Carrie came to you and resigned, you said, have you told Mary?
Yeah, or Mona.
Yeah.
And she was still talking about how do we want to communicate this.
Yeah, got it. So effectively, you learned that you had not been told the truth by a few people.
A couple of people, yes, that's exactly right.
Got it.
Nutshell.
And by confronting their distortion or withholding of information, you will potentially expose others.
That's true. Right. Okay. I mean, if I, and that actually came up with Mary, you know, how she was given a confidence. And so if I say, hey, I know you spoke with Mona and Mary, then it's obvious that
a couple of things I'll say is this stuff is super, super normal. Like back channeling, as you know, especially in small organizations, is not some grand shock.
Betrayal.
It's just a part of the business. I will say it's concerning that your partner engaged in some of that. And I think my question for you is, what do you want?
Well, I think one thing is restore trust in the sense, or I guess a sense that I can, with my business partner, I can have a level of honesty and openness where, and maybe this is unavoidable, you know, and there is something to be said for having a back channel, you know, for people who, for whatever reason, are not comfortable.
So I just want to make sure I understand a couple things more clearly. So sure. when Mona went to Mary, she proposed the idea.
Carrie. Office manager.
She proposed the idea to Carrie that she become the director.
Yeah. So here's, I don't know how that conversation unfolded and I don't know who initiated it.
Okay.
But
are they friends, Mona and Carrie?
I, not that I'm aware of, you know, I don't know how much contact they have outside, but I'm not aware they're socially, you know, close. Mona is around 50 and Carrie is in her 20s. So there's.
All right. I think there are a couple of different ways to handle it. One of which is you first want to get clear on what you can know and what you can only surmise. And then you want to, if you want to clear the air with your business partner, you can simply say, hey, I know in small organizations like this, information flows in crazy ways. I'm finding myself full of questions, and I feel like I just want to get things out in the open for both of us so that we can keep working well together. And so here's what I know, that this information was shared in a certain way. And as far as I can tell, it can only come from you, which I'm not even saying it shouldn't or can't. I just want to make sure that I know. And then the second thing I don't know is I'm left with questions about how this may have unfolded. And I just want us to level set, be on the same page, have the same information, and then we can keep walking forward. So just walk me through what happened there so that I'm not, you know, what I don't want to have are outstanding questions between us that are hidden from each other. I want us to both be really transparent and open about what we're feeling, what we're experiencing, what we're seeing, and then go from there. So I think it's worth letting her know, hey, there's some static here in the system based on the way a conversation happened. I want to discern the signal from the noise. And the only way that I know to do that is to start with you, my partner. And let's just get that cleared up between us first and foremost. I mean, whatever our employees do and whatever, however they navigate through a system is kind of their thing. But as partners, we need to make sure we're both really open and clear. And then you can say, and at the end, I want to give you a chance to clear the air with me. If there's anything that I'm doing that's troubling you that you haven't felt comfortable bringing up, I want to make sure there's room for that. So this is kind of one of those clear the air, not so much confront, but rather acknowledge your own experience in front of her, give her a chance to work with what you're experiencing. I think that's a real kindness to people. And you can do it in a way that isn't accusatory or confronting. You can do it in a way that just says, let me state the facts as I understand them. Let me tell you what that's raised for me. If I were in your shoes, I would want to know that from my business partner. And I certainly want to ensure we have a really clear and open relationship. And then at the end, you make the offer, you know, and if there's anything on your end that you need to talk to me about, the way that I've conducted myself that left you with any questions, let me know.
Yeah. No, I mean, I have been working through module 2, I think it is, the one on hard conversations. And I probably am in the camp of the no cooker or the
yes, and that's good to know about yourself. So what I'm encouraging you to do is be the grill. The grill. That talks great. Talk direct. In this instance, just to be really clear, that model of, you know, for those of you who don't know it, there's quadrants, and it's basically when you have a hard conversation, what is your tendency? Do you tend to talk fast and straight? Or do you tend to talk slow and around? Do you tend to talk fast and around? Do you tend to talk slow and straight? Like there's four quadrants. And I have a little metaphor for each quadrant. One is, it's just a cooking metaphor. You have like, if you go straight and you want to have the conversation now, you're like a grill at really high direct heat. And some situations call for that. If that's the only thing you always do, you're going to burn the meat. You know, you're going to have some variety. Then you've got what I call, I can't remember all the metaphors now because I've changed them, but the no cooker is like a cooler. And it's literally talk later and talk around. Don't be too direct. And sometimes that's really necessary in incredibly difficult situations and delicate situations. You got to be very, very kind of ambassadorial. But in this instance, I think a direct, straight conversation will really help you. And I know it's not your tendency, but so what I've done for you, just to kind of translate it into the language of the module, in the modules, I talk about having sort of doing a little bit of awareness on yourself first, like, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? What am I wanting? What might they be thinking, feeling, and wanting? Do I have any triggers that are active here? There may not be any triggers act. I don't sense you're triggered by this. I think I sense you're like, oh, this is a weird thing that I want to sort out.
Well, initially when it hit me, there were experiences like she told me she wasn't going to do that. And she did that, you know, and it was like, what, you know, betrayal. I mean,
on the
far side. Yeah.
If you are triggered, then it's okay to acknowledge that. I was just observing your reaction. Sure. This moment didn't seem very triggered, but if you are, that's okay to acknowledge, like, hey, here's a trigger for me. This is a hot button. this is something that's like a tripwire that's going to mess up our relationship. And I want you to be aware of it. I want to flag it for you. So a lot of hard conversations is twofold. It's a preamble that frames why the conversation is happening, what your interest is in the conversation, why you're going to do this. And then self-revelation about giving someone window and insight into what you see, know, and experience and believe. And then asking for their response, you know. So what I try to do is pave that. A lot of the reason that people will delay a hard conversation is because they intuitively know that how you start it will largely determine its outcome. And so that's why I've given you sort of a series of little sayings that will ensure that that or increase the likelihood that that conversation will have the outcome you're after.
There's and certainly opportunity. Thank you. To clear the air. I mean, we have a history, you know, she's been a partner for about 10 years. And there was one period of time when her daughter worked at the center. And I had some misgivings. Not her daughter was a brilliant teacher and a very cheerful employee, but I know that it could be a minefield. Ultimately, she stopped working at the company, and there was a blow up because I don't want to get into the whole details of it, but it got ugly. And, you know, unless you feel like it's worth digging into that. But anyway, for a period it got ugly, and you know, I think there may be some scar tissue there.
I would just ask you this: is that issue resolved for you, or are you still harboring issues and you haven't really told the truth about what you felt and experienced? Because here's a really important thing: when you're a no cooker, you are at risk of betraying others without knowing you're doing it. You don't mean to. What happens is you present yourself in a way that isn't true. Mm-hmm. You indicate that you're fine when you're not fine. That is a kind of betrayal in the workplace that says, I'm deceiving you actively. Most people who do it don't do it because they intend to. It's because they're afraid. Like, yeah. I don't want to upset the apple cart. I don't want to have the fight. I don't know how to get out of this. If I get into this, I don't know what this means for the part. There's so much at stake. It's just better if I just let sleeping dogs lie.
Right.
If you want to do that, you can. Then if you want to come clean later, then you got to come clean on your own betrayal, which is you say, I have to apologize to you. I owe you an apology. I was not communicating in ways that were as authentic and as honest as I should have. And that's that. Or you can let sleeping dogs lie and say, well, I swallowed my pill on that one. I'm not happy about it, but that was my fault, not hers. I never confronted. So now I got to own that and shut it down and move on. So you've got to decide that first. Do you have the ability to truly release that as you said you had? Or do you want to bring it back up and say, look, I'm holding on to this and I'm not able to let it go yet until I honestly process what's really going on between us.
Right.
You know, so those are just some things to flag for you.
Fair enough. No, I find that, you know, sometimes I get very irritated with her for specific things. And, you know, I just find it hard. One, she's a very pleasant person, you know, so, you know, I have something that I want to bring up with her, and it's hard to get mad if somebody's really pleasant and cheerful, at least for me. I don't maintain
sure. Well, just to be really clear, you know, it's not a requirement that you express anger, true. But you do want to connect with and become emotionally honest. It takes courage to be emotionally honest. Now, you can be emotionally honest in front of people without making it even about them. So, you know, not uncommon in a like just last night, my wife wanted to do something or didn't want to do something that was really important to me. And I was really disappointed because I had been doing things that weren't important to me, but were important to her. And I was looking for a little reciprocity. And the way that I said that in that moment was, hey, you're not responsible for any of the stuff that I'm feeling right now, but I want you to know and see who I really am, which is I'm really disappointed in this. It's not your responsibility to fix that. I'm not telling you need to change. If you don't change, there's no punishment. I just want you to know me. I just want you to see me, that I'm having this emotional reaction. And that allows her to engage me, not from a place of defensiveness, but from a place of curiosity that says, wow, okay, didn't realize how important this was to you. Yeah, that's why I'm letting you know. Just want you to see it. And I will be able to let it go, but I want you to know that I'm disappointed. And that helped her. And we had a great conversation as a result, but that was me being emotionally honest without directing at her or demanding something different, but just saying, if I were in your shoes, I would want to know the effect that my decisions have on this person that I'm in life with. And it went beautifully. I could have also said, this is unfair. Look at all I've done for you. How come you're not doing for me? I feel like you don't care about me. Like, I could have done that too, you know, and I would have been like, then we would have, I'm sure, been in a what? Look at all these things that would be on the ledge. You know, who did what for who, right? So anyway, the point is I'm just giving you that as an example of, and I'm not always successful, by the way, but I've had to spend a lot of years trying to learn how to be emotionally honest. My tendency, my pattern was more like yours. And so I had to work my way into the liberation that comes from being present to my emotions and, when appropriate, admitting those emotions in front of others.
Even this, when they're negative.
Especially when they're negative.
Right.
Yep. And again, I think the way that I would phrase it is admitting those feelings in front of people is very different than expressing them to people.
Yep.
Right? So I can say, I can speak to you in a very angry tone and accuse you and make, and you can feel all of my emotion. Or I can simply say to you, I can like unplug from you and show you in the moment and just go, look, Ed, I am noticing I'm incredibly angry right now. And I'm not blaming you for that anger, but I want you to see it, because I know that something about the way this conversation is going is provoking something in me, and I'm getting really reactive. So this is good, because we're learning about what's important to me, right? Things that make us angry are an indicator of our values. So now I know this is a value. This is really important to me. And you, as someone who works with me, I want you to see this, because that way we can navigate it better together. And I hope you'll give me the same in return. You'll show me and reveal your emotion to me and the reactions you're experiencing. Because now we're getting into, remember we talked about the emotional system driving 80% of decision-making and behavior. Well, if that's invisible, you have no idea why people are doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But if you've got hidden resentments and unresolved issues that you have either decided not to dissolve in your own, or you have decided not to resolve between someone, then you've got just back alley dealings that are going to go on, and lots of static. And really, those are your two options. You either dissolve it on your own, and that is metabolizing, integrating, forgiving, releasing, even though that person was never confronted, exposed, hasn't changed the behavior, you decide to absorb that. And then you bury it at sea. It never comes back. You can't ever bring it back from the grave. That's the dissolve part. Or you can resolve, which is where you have the interpersonal hard conversation. Right. And you can, like I said, acknowledge, hey, I didn't dissolve this thing that I intended to, but it never left. And I thought it could, and it would, and it didn't. And I'm sorry I didn't bring it up. And I'm bringing it up now because I failed to resolve it properly. And people are more likely to engage you when you come to them with that kind of self-awareness.
Right. And I think I can frame it within, hey, I really value our relationship, you know, and our working relationship that has lasted all these years. So I just want to, you know, put this out, and this is how I have been reacting. You know, whatever topic it is that,
yeah,
you know, they're the things, you know, that have bugged me.
Yeah.
And I my tendency is, if I bring it up, I certainly don't typically communicate how it has annoyed, if something has annoyed me. I don't know that comes out, you know, and you know, where I sit on it. So I think this is a way to help me be emotionally honest in a way that is hopefully non-threatening.
I think for you and who you are, your likelihood of being really threatening is extremely low, you know? So, you know, I would say my caution to you is to not walk around in too many circles or have too many preambles.
Fair enough.
If you go back and listen to this recording, I gave you a really succinct couple of different openers that you can use that should just be really clear and really direct. For you, it's going to feel terrifying and awful and terrible. But for the rest of us, it will finally feel like a relief, because they've done lots of research on this. They found that bosses that are considered absolute jerks, bosses that are really nice, and bosses that are direct but respectful, they rank order them. And they find that the bosses that are liked the best are very direct and respectful. Everybody knows what's going on and why. The next level down are jerks. And the bosses people like the least are nice bosses.
Interesting.
And the reason is because, at least with a jerk, they know where they stand. They're getting the
right.
Fair enough. Wow. With a nice person or a detached person or an overly friendly person, they're just like, I have no idea what this person really thinks. And then I can feel sometimes I know they don't like it, but they're not telling me the truth. And now I don't trust them. And now I don't know when they say, hey, I'm doing a great job. Am I really doing a great job? Or are they just being nice like they always are? Because I don't trust this. So that's where your emotional honesty is the fastest way for you to personally up-level your leadership, so that people are really starting to go, okay, that's a person I can respect. I know where I stand with them. I get the truth every time. There's nothing hidden. That's going to help.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Good enough for now?
I think so. It's plenty to work with.
Awesome. Let's see here. Jason, you're getting called on. How's it going?
Hey, Shane. All right. How are you?
Good, man.
It's too much. My internet's been going in and out, so I've dropped quite a few calls, and then I'm pretty choppy, so I don't know if you'll be able to understand anything I'm talking about anyway.
I got you. We hear you and see you just right. Fine.
Nah, it's just go and started from zero under models, was putting together an index type deal mainly for myself, but if anyone wants it, it's fine. But starting all the way from, I guess indexing, best word, all the way through your videos from time to what's provided to the worksheets, the audio, the video, and then I'm starting to put stop points in the time so I can easily reference it with just a search or do anything else.
I love it. I would love access to that when you're done. That's not something I'll ever get to.
I didn't think you would, but yeah. I'm more than willing to send it on to you.
I'd be so happy, and I'll be sure to share it with others. They've been asking for it here. I see that'd be amazing. That's a kindness to everybody in this group. They would be most grateful, I'm certain. So.
Well, it helps you reference. You'd have it in front, you know, all your videos. And if I ever get the time, then I'd do it through the coaching too, and just put the attendees that are who are there with what dates, and then what topics were discussed. So just easy to refer and go back to. You threw a whole bunch of good nuggets out in this call here. And unless I go back through or actually document it in my little workbook over there, I won't remember. So hopefully it'll help in that manner to refer back in time.
I get it. I so appreciate that. I really do. Thank you.
No problem.
Good. What else is going on? Anything you want to check in on, talk about?
No, I spend a lot of time doing that. I didn't dive into a lot of the mental aspect. I can see, let me see. I did take some notes on other stuff. I'll just throw this one out there. This isn't in my notes, but it's something I've realized over time. Bear with me as I belittle people, but just riding in the car. So hockey, right? We just went up to a 7-hour drive up to Michigan, and realizing, you know, talking with my 14-year-old or talking with anyone here at work, anywhere that's been in the military for 30, 35 years, or myself that's learning all these kind of things to my 11-year-old is a different hockey thing. You know, I got voted in as the president of a hockey club here for our school, and sitting down with coaches, and no one seems to dive into this stuff. The depth the depth beyond a day-to-day or a task, a go-do immediate task, in a lot of people's minds, and I know you hate when I say in all people's minds, it's not a definitive like that, but it's very shallow. I'm talking to my 11-year-old and 14-year-old, and I looked over at him at different points, and I said, this guy that's calling is the varsity coach. I'm about to talk to him exactly the same way I just talked to you. And it revolved around leadership and something with more depth to, well, they threw out there and said, well, we sucked last year because we didn't have good leadership on the team. And the conversation, I let it go for a while and came back around to me. And I said, so I hear you say we didn't have good leadership. What does that mean? What's good leadership? And the varsity coach, the JV coach, the middle school coach, the prior president, the vice president, they all look at me. I'm like, if you guys can't define it, how do you figure 14 and 16-year-old kids will? Mm-hmm. It's and they still look, you know, and so we get into the values talk, and that was my precursor to them forcing them to sit down and come up with their own why for a team. You know, and it came around to the kid was voted in as their captain of the team because he threw the best kegger parties on the weekend. And I was like, and you wonder why you didn't have good leadership? Well, the kids vote them in. I was like, well, you're the coach. You need to steer them. You need to teach them. You need to, you know, so a lot of your modules came up, you know, staging the ascent and talking about presenting the ideas and then how we garner the support. So absolutely the kids have to vote them in, but you have to give them the left and right boundaries. But it doesn't matter if I'm talking to that varsity, you know, my door's open, so I may talk a little softer, but I have this talk with 35-year chiefs here. This is where we've started over in the military. I go to breakfast with other people in the civilian world and I start talking about them. And it's just so simplistic in their mind when someone's, you know, interviewing for a management position, he wants to break into the management world, and we get talking and he says, well, I don't want to really throw all my cards on the table, 'cause then through that interview process, they'll take my ideas and they'll run with them. And I was like, stop it. That doesn't even, yes, that is a possibility. Who gives a crap? Bottom line is, if you present these ideas and they implement them, it's better for the organization, right? It's something you had wanted. Like, how are you gonna better if you're always holding these little keys, these little nuggets, and trying to be selfish? And I don't know. I'm struggling at why. I mean, I go into these talks, I think people are quitting to walk in the door because it instantly, I can change any conversation into a value conversation. You know, why are we having this conversation? Service before self is one of our deals. And I look at them and I talk, I was like, so how's the company benefit from that? You know, and they don't, you know, and it's just, I don't know. I know I've said it numerous times, but it's, the conversations are so superficial and shallow. I don't know how we.
Yeah, you're right, man. The way I would say is, instead of superficial, I would just say it's unconscious, which I think is related. I think most people go through life not actually investigating what motivates them or why things matter to them or any of that. It's just unconscious. They're unaware, they're asleep at the wheel, and they're on kind of automatic pilot, and they are programmed. They're in habitual programmed patterns of thinking. And so any kind of discussion that in requires them to investigate the unconscious part of them is a heavy lift for a lot of people. You know, unless there's something really wrong that they're feeling is not working, they don't have a lot of incentive to investigate. You know, it's this last conversation with Ed, something's not working right. So Ed is willing to investigate, what are these unconscious things that are motivating me to not have a hard conversation or to have a hard conversation? I'm the same way. I don't have the time in life to investigate every last thing in my life. So I got to figure out what are the things causing the most amount of pain. I'll investigate those. So, you know, a part of it for you as you're having these conversations is to kind of just respect the limits of humans, which are, they're usually motivated by solving pain in order to do the deep work. So that there's usually something not working quite right that would cause them to go, what if we dig a little deeper? What if we find what's behind the thing? And that's how you get to things like why. So you're like, people come to me, when leaders come to me, they come to me with, I can't seem to keep good talent. That's the problem. Well, there are 100 different reasons you're not keeping good talent. But one of them might be, what is your why? Do you have a higher purpose? Do you have a sense of values that they align to? Because when you have these non-financial things that exist in real, tangible ways. People align themselves to that in such a way that they will give discretionary effort beyond what the job description calls for, because it's connected to meaning now, not just money. And that's a powerful motivator, right? But that conversation I just had, which I'm speaking to the choir with you, I don't have permission to have that until someone has pain. You know, someone's like, my business is thriving. Things are overwhelming. I got so much money. I don't know what to do with. Everybody's happy. I'm happy. And I go, yeah, but do you have a why? They're like, nope, but don't need one. You know, everything's going great. So why would I spend a lot of time on that? So just for you to kind of begin to think through, now that you have some mastery around this stuff, it is frustrating at first to feel like you can see the forest for the trees and no one else can. And you're like, what the heck? Why is everybody not doing this? And so the starting point for you is identify their pain, connect to what their pain is, and go, what is it that you most want to fix? And if they want to fix something that is completely unrelated to what you think would solve it, you have to link it directly to that pain. You have to find a way to make that link to be able to have that conversation in a way that they're going to hear and want to do it.
Well, that makes, that hits home with a lot of stuff in prior conversations. You know, yes, my group, I'm pretty pleased with where we're heading, what we're doing, and the understanding of the conversations we have. But the peers don't seem to understand. I talk about our missions here and a lot of people. So we're a refueling wing, you know, and it's easy to say we give gas to other airplanes, done. It's like, okay, well, that's oversimplified by far. It's like, what are our missions? And I go down a list of about 8 to 10 missions to try and garner that. Why? One of them is, you know, deterrence or readiness. A lot of people show up to work and here they are, but meanwhile they have, you know, a pending root canal that makes them non-deployable for 6 months, 10 months, whatever, because a dentist and they can't get an appointment. Well, that's what you failed me on one of your missions. One of your missions is readiness. I need to be able to task you within 24 hours to go wherever I ask you to go. And they just don't understand that because, well, they're here, they're pushing this pencil, they're turning a wrench, they're doing whatever. And I've had to change that conversation, but even my peers, the other colonels at, in the groups don't, their simplified answer is we give gas, very easy. It's done. Like, no, you're missing the point, you know, and it's.
So with your peers, what is it that they complain about? What are they frustrated about?
Well, you got morale and talent leaving. I mean, the Air Force or pilots.
Perfect. That's where you start. And you go, hey, are you frustrated by the morale on your team? Yes. Is it okay if nothing ever changes? If morale were to just stay flagging, is that an acceptable outcome for you? If they go, yes, then guess what? End of conversation.
Yeah, I got you.
Nothing else you can do. Like, okay, well, let me know when that's not acceptable and I think I can help. But if they say, no, that's not acceptable, then you say, if I could show you a way to change that, would you be interested in talking more about that? Yes. So what you've done is you've garnered permission. The word yes is a powerful word when someone says it for themselves. That's why asking permission, extending offers, like I've got a bowl of strawberries, would you like them? No. Okay. No harm, no foul. You don't want the delicious strawberries, you don't have to have them. So some of it is for you. This will help you not just get branded as kind of a one note piano, like values, values, mission, values, values, mission. And they're like, hey, yeah, we heard it 100 times. But instead going, no, this isn't about I like values and mission in the abstract just because I think it's good to have meaning and depth. That's not, I mean, that may be my personality and fine, but I'm not talking about that with you guys. What I'm talking about with you guys is fixing real problems. There's tons of research, Southwest Airlines, Apple, Google, so many companies, luck companies, they're an aggregates company. They take big rocks and they make small rocks. They own quarry mines. They have the highest levels of employee engagement in the world. They're in the 99th percentile because they talk about mission, vision, values, and they integrate it into the work lives of people taking rocks and making them small rocks. you know, this is an incredible thing. You would never expect to have high levels of engagement. They have incredible retention. They attract way better talent than any other blue collar work in the world. That's because they know how to do the very things that I show you how to do. I learned from them. So when I'm introducing this stuff to you, this is field tested methods that actually create more morale and better retention, along with a whole host of other things. But you just mentioned those two. That's all you have to give them. You just have to show them that that is what's going to solve the problem. But the way you have that conversation is the same way you would have a sales conversation, where you're speaking to somebody who has a pain that you know you can help them with, but you have to get their assent. You have to get their yes. And the way you do that is you start with, here are the questions I would ask. What do you most want? If you could paint a picture of everything that you want, what would it look and feel like here in your team? And they start talking about, oh, we'd have people excited to show up to work. We'd have the best people sticking around. We'd have great. Awesome. Okay. Why is that important to you? That's the next question. What do you want? Why is that important to you? Now you're getting into their values. At first, you're going to be like, shallow. Like, well, it'll just make my life easier. Great. What else is it going to give you? Well, maybe they get to the point where like, well, for me, that's fulfilling. Like, I've done a good job. Good. Some fulfillment. Good. Next question. What do you think is stopping you from getting this thing? What is standing in the way? And here, you want them to eventually get to me. You know, like something I'm not doing isn't, you know, they'll point at a few things here and there, but you want them ultimately to get a little bit to the me. Then you can say, just mirror it back to them. Everything they just told you, mirror it back so they know you heard. Sounds like you really want more morale. You want talent to stay. Sounds like that's really important to you because you really want X, Y, and Z in your life, fulfillment. Sounds like the things that are standing in the way are, you're tired of having the same conversations. You may not be very effective when you have those conversations. It's what you told me. Did I get all that right? Yes, you heard me. Is there anything else I didn't get right? Nope, you got it. Good. Then you ask, is status quo an acceptable outcome for you? Is this thing that you just said, if it never changes, are you okay with that? And that's where they've got to give you a hard no. And then if they give you a no, you make the offer. And then you're asking for a yes. That's how you start the conversation of change management when power dynamics are effectively equal or not in your favor. And can you see how that might create a different conversation? Because where you're starting from is empathy. Not ideology.
Yeah.
And your tendency will be, because of who you are, is to come from ideology. This is right, hence to forth for all the world. These are the absolute immutable truths. They must be adhered to. That kind of thinking works for certain people. It doesn't work for most people. Some people it does. So anyway, I'm just trying to give you some ways to get them to change, to begin the change. Process.
That's a different way to look at it. So the GROW model comes to mind as you go through a lot of those questions. So goals, reality, obstacles, and way forward. When you're looking to mentor or coach, two different things, but I guess coaching to try, well, mentor to pull it out of them, right? They already know the answer. You're just trying to get them to that obstacle. But no, that's a good path. And you're absolutely right. That's my next hurdle is not to sound like the broken record, right? Not to just have it so theorized. And in my head, it makes sense. And I've thrown out a few sensors out there to say when I don't make sense, because many of them have been with me along this journey of development, and they understand I can jump into most parts of the conversation and continue on. Whereas if it's somebody fresh, in the essence of trying to be succinct and keep it somewhat tighter, I'll miss a whole bunch of lead up and a lot of points. And it just comes out as, yeah, theory. Where are you going with this? What are you doing?
The thing that I would wish you had, and maybe there is a way for you to get this, is some kind of data or evidence that what you've been doing is making an impact. Because if you have any way of doing that, even if it's just subjective or anecdotal, and you can just say, these are the stories I'm starting to hear. You know, what you're saying is, again, it's a sales conversation. It's really what you're having. And just so you know, a sales conversation is really facilitating decision-making. I'm here to help facilitate the best decision for you. I'm not here to make you do what I think you should do. That's not what selling is. Selling is, I'm here to facilitate a really good decision for you. I'm here to help remove the barriers and obstacles to you making decisions that are in your and your organization's interest. That's what I'm here to do. So how can I have that? I can't do that unless I understand you, right? So that's that first part. But then after you've gotten to the, can I show you a way? Then if you had any kind of data that said, hey, you know what? I started learning how to do certain things, and this is the kinds of results we've been getting. I think we can get you those results. Does that interest you? If so, here's the kinds of conversations you and I need to have to start having. And I can show you how to do it. I know how to do it. I can show you. And then you go, very first conversation is, why do you do this? And he's like, well, to refuel planes. You're like, great. I need to know what the human impact is. The only way for your why to actually motivate, build morale, keep great talent is if you have a non-financial, deeply human reason that you exist. So what does refueling do for people? Well, it empowers and enables, it supports, but what does it support? Not a plane. It supports the mission of the plane. Well, what are the range of missions? What's the highest level we could occupy in terms of mission that is the most human and the most meaningful? So we enable and empower the protection of citizens of this country or this state. We enable the whatever, you know, you can come up with whatever it is, but it's that really human expression that says, look, when you're plugging that valve into that thing and deploying fuel, you're not just doing a repetitive ritualized behavior. You are contributing to a deeply human, very important mission in the world. You're also contributing to the safety of the people that you work with and for. You know, properly fueling a plane can be a very dangerous thing. You can do it wrong and you risk a lot of lives, right? So all of that stuff matters a lot. So anyway, I'm just kind of riffing off the top of my head, but I just want you to hear how that could go.
No, that's great. And we do get there. I think you present it much more fluently than I can get to. So I've got to work on that. I think you have a bonus lesson on that. What bonus three is, something about conversations or how to communicate better.
Bonus five is how to manage up and across.
That's up and across. I thought there was a meeting, not just a meetings, but how to present to an audience better.
That is module three. And that's more like, okay, if you are presenting to people. What we're talking about is a one-to-one conversation. And fortunately, it doesn't take a lot of hard work. I gave you the five questions to ask. Anybody can do that. That's easy. All you have to do is mirror back accurately and know when to ask the next question.
Absolutely.
And it'll shift.
I didn't even know I had a question today, but I appreciate it.
You bet. Awesome. Okay, Jason, good enough for now?
Yeah, Shane, thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm going to go to Diego next. Diego, I know you've been going through a lot. I don't know if you're here, but
I'm here.
Great. Thank you. Just checking in with you. I know last week we talked about a pretty cataclysmic experience here with the organization and also a conversation you needed to have. So wanted to just get up to date on that.
Sure. Things are settling down. We're still not trying to reorganize. I had the conversation. I used this exactly, I think you just mentioned today, you know, what you want and kind of linked that. So I did that. It worked only for 10, for a few minutes, I think.
Okay. What happened? Tell me what happened. Like, give us details.
It worked. Conversation worked with the person. It worked fine and seemed like she was getting more in line with it and accepting. But the day after, it just, I think it just reverted. It went back. I think in module three, you have a, when you talk about the different steps, right? And you have a, the lady that I think is, I don't know, Barbara, I don't know the name of the lady. It's a mirror to the person that I'm dealing with. So it's, everything is bad. It's finding any and every thing that can go wrong. Doesn't want to change. Even though we linked it and she agreed that that's something she want to do, it is something she's good at, still like the changes themselves are just too much. She doesn't want to do it. So what I'm thinking is about pulling back a little bit and just maybe be more deliberate about like staging an ascent. I had to like work harder at like give her space because it's just too much.
Okay, so great stuff. So let me just, I have a bunch of thoughts, but before I give you that, I want to hear really specifically. You said to her, what do you want? What did she say?
She said, I'm a taskmaster. I like to do the task. I like to enhance processes and make sure that everything gets done.
Okay.
I said, perfect. That's exactly what I would like you to do in this new team. It's what you do today plus another different task, but still tasks at the end of the day, same thing. And then we'll remove the stressful part for you, which you don't want to talk to the business guys and organize the list of things you have to do. You just want to focus on the to-do list. So we'll remove that stressful part from you. So you only focus on the tasks that are to you, and then you can enhance the process and do what you do best, which is do your taskmaster work. And she said, yeah, now that you put it that way, it makes sense. That's what she told me.
So then she says, yep, I'm all in. And then the next day, she completely doesn't do anything you guys agreed to, correct?
Pretty much. She goes back, I think, you know, because on top of that, we're moving people around, right? She has a team that she's worked hard together. So now we're aligning more of the teams to the business needs. Things are changed. So we're trying to align teams to be more effective and have unique priorities instead of having a separate team that has multiple teams inside that align to other teams and then not necessarily aligning the same priorities. So she's having a hard time letting go of those people going to report to other people.
Okay, got it. So did she come back to you and say, no, I don't want to do this after all. I really can't stand this. Or are you more seeing evidence of behavior that says, I don't think she wants this because her behavior doesn't align with what she said?
So two things. The behaviors, she's still sort of pushing back. She's meeting with two other VPs that I have in my team. And then she had a meeting with my boss. And she opened up and kind of like said that she was not really on board or that she's too many changes and it's too much happening. So my boss just gave me the warning, hey, I know you had the conversation because I we're in sync on that. I know you. She still needs work. She's still not there.
Got it. Okay, good. All right. So what you're dealing with now then is super normal and may or may not yet reveal whether she can or can't do the thing you want her to do. It's too early to say. What we know for a fact is the organization just went through a major trauma that is terrifying for most people, even people that are known to be safe. So people are in high alert, high stress, and that what that does is that's going to reduce their ability to change easily. Not everybody, but some people. She is going to be resistant to change based on everything you've told me about her. Even if she says she wants to change, everything in her is going to resist. And the reason is because of competing commitments. So every single one of us on the planet has competing commitments. Competing commitments are, I want to have a really great quality family life and I want to make as much money as I can. How do I do both? Those are competing commitments because in order to have a good family life, you got to spend a lot of time with them. In order to make lots of money, you might have to spend a lot of time in the office, right? So that's a kind of a baseline competing commitment. So for her, she's got a competing commitment. I want to grow and expand. I want to get better. I want to go higher in this organization, but I'm also really committed to my people.
Yeah.
So that's a competing commitment she's got. So it's really normal for somebody to vacillate for a period of time, to be unclear, to say yes and then no. And this staging the ascent is part of that. But another part of this is to realize that, so that's going on no matter what, even if there's really clear communication. It's also very possible that she walked away from your conversation with a slightly different understanding than one you intended. So a best practice that I always recommend when you're talking about changing a role, resetting an expectation, if you do it and you notice that it's not happening, even though they said they would, the next step in the process is to say, have another conversation and to realize that all communication is a series of conversations. It's almost never in the corporate world, one and done, right? It very rarely does that work. So the next conversation is you revisit it. You say, okay, we had a conversation. I know there's a lot of moving parts. I know a lot's going on for you. I want to check in and hear where you're at with it. So you don't have to do this right away, but you can come back to her and say, this was kind of our agreement. How are you feeling about that agreement? And she'll say, well, I'm kind of this. I don't know about that. Or really, whatever. And then you work with her and you get it refined again. Once you get it refined again to the thing that you think is acceptable for you, and she then verbally agrees to, then you say to her, I need you to write this down in an email and send it to me. I want to know what you understand about this agreement so that we can both understand it the same way. And the reason it's so important for her to write it and not you is that she has to generate the agreement in her mind from her perspective.
Right, right.
And when she does that, she's going to be more committed to it. She's also going to understand it better. And then the reason she has to email it to you is you get to correct it, because she will undoubtedly have some way that it's expressed that you go, well, I don't really mean that. I mean more this. Then you have a documented record. Then you can go back to her the next time she still doesn't behave that way. And you go, hey, this was our agreement. Why isn't this happening?
Yeah. So another dimension to this is just like that person in the, and in your story is any compliment, she takes it as not a compliment. She thinks it's like a hit. So she's like we're wanting to get her to progress because she's good, but she feels that we're getting to progress because she's not doing her job right. We don't understand her team, and like all this stuff. It's like the positive, she turns it into a negative every time. Great.
Awesome. So another great way to have that conversation is flag that for her. Just show her what mirror for her, how you observe and experience her. For example, you could say, hey, something I notice about you is that when I use the word progress, it seems like you take that negatively. Am I reading that right? She'll be like, yeah, well, it seems that, you know, maybe I'm not doing my job right. And so, okay, interesting. Would it be okay if you accepted that as a compliment rather than a correction? And you literally ask her permission. You slow her down enough to show her what is a habituated patterned response to life. She's that way with her husband, her friends, her parents, everybody. That is a habituated pattern of response. And what you do is when you slow her down and you make the suggestion with permission that says, would it be okay if you received what I said there, that word as a compliment? Would that be okay with you?
Okay.
I go, gosh, I don't know. I don't know if that's okay. I'm really hard on myself. Yeah, I noticed. You know, it's really hard to manage you when you're so hard on yourself. Because sometimes I really want to celebrate you and it's not getting received. Like those things, when you flag that for people that are in a habituated negative space,
yeah,
gives it a fighting chance. There's a little bit of break in the curtains and they go, wait, some light came through. That's weird.
The only compliment she takes is about a great job. I think that's the only thing she sees as positive.
Yeah, sure.
If I say great, that's about it.
Yeah, so I just think this is another way to help her. I mean, again, everybody has their own personality styles, right? So that's one technique you can use to get it to land for her, is to just mirror, flag it, and then ask permission for it to be received the way you intend it to be received.
Okay, good pointers.
And often that's enough for some. It's no different than what I was telling Jason about. Is it okay if I share with you a way forward? Well, you don't have to ask permission, but when somebody says the word yes in their own body, when they hear themselves say yes, it realigns things in them that they don't even know is getting realigned.
That's good. So
that's really helpful to just kind of say, hey, wondering if you'd allow this to land in the way that I actually intended, which is as a compliment. Can you do that for me? Is that a possibility or is there no way to do that? You know? Yeah, I can. Great. Done. Let's keep moving.
Yeah. We're just going to slow down the changes for her and then maybe do like a first changes in matrix organization. So her, she keeps her team and it kind of like it in stages. So that way she kind of gets to it. So.
That's great. And as long as you show her that map, you know, don't just sort of build it in your own mind and then start executing it. Build it in your own mind, then reveal it to her in its entirety, the whole plan. And say, all you need to worry about now is this one stage. That's it. This is the end game. This is the next stage. These are the things that are coming. You don't have to worry about them. You just need to know they're on their way because that'll calm her down. Her anxiety is really high right now.
Yeah, on top of what her personal life situation is tough. So I have to be triple careful.
I know. Actually, you're doing great. You don't have to be too careful with her. She can take this. And a big part of what you can do is give her information, give her accurate mirroring, ask permission for things to be received the way you intend, and then lay out the change for her. And then along the way, as she makes agreements with you, ask her to email you her understanding of the agreement.
Perfect.
Little things along the way. Hey, can you just shoot me a quick email with your understanding of what we just agreed to?
That's
going to help her a lot. And it's going to help you be able to go, oh, actually, she didn't understand what I said at all. You know, she said, but she didn't.
Yeah. Perfect.
Super normal. Awesome.
Yeah. Thanks, Jay.
You bet.
All good.
Awesome. Okay. Let's go to who else we have left here. We got Tim and Michelle, either one of you who wants to jump in. Shy people today. There we go.
I'm just laughing that neither are jumping in real quick.
So. I get it. I know. I always have to pull teeth from you guys. Actually, all of you. I'm pulling teeth from all of you. It's a very hard job I have.
Yeah, right. Poor you.
Thank you for your love and attention to me. Okay, how you doing? What's the latest?
I'm doing all right. Better than last week, anyway.
Okay. Or what happened?
The 2 weeks ago, whatever.
Yeah, I know. There was a lot there. And we didn't really dig in too much, so that's why I was curious. Do we want to dig in this time? Do you want to spend a little time on it?
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember exactly which one we were talking about. but yeah, I'm happy to do it. Yeah,
I couldn't tell you because you were deliberately vague. So I didn't have much to go on.
I wasn't being vague to be vague. I was being vague because the detail is a lot. It just would have been really long. So
no, I know you were deliberately doing that. I was aware. So well, we got some time here. Got 15 minutes at least, where I can go longer. People can leave when they need to. But
do you want to unrecord?
Yeah, I can stop recording. Sure.
Okay.
Resume the recording. Thank you for that. Let's go to Michelle. Anything for you? Or are you good?
I'm good. Benefited a lot from the conversation in general. So, as I navigate change here, which is at a snail's pace. But it's just, you know, I've had the conversation a lot this week on, look, we can do this. We can continue to literally do the same thing, expecting a different result. Just let me know. I'm here, whichever way you want to be. So, and that's just been, I mean, that's pretty much been my approach for a bit in general. And just letting things unfold. It's pretty much, you know, a previous manager once told me sometimes you have to sit and watch things play out. And that's hard for me. But
Yeah, that is hard. That's hard for most high achievers, for sure.
So, but in the meantime, I get to learn a little bit of patience. And
that's worth a lot. That's worth a lot.
And a little bit of, I don't know, just a lot of different things and how to approach, you know, we've you know, we've talked about how, you know, I had some missteps in the beginning and obtaining back credibility. I think for a lot, you know, I have built back some of that credibility, a lot of that credibility, at least with my team, or at least got some backstory to a lot of things that contributed that were completely outside of my control. And I think you've talked before where, you know, like there's just this buildup, this person's coming in and they're going to do this and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, what are we, stupid? So already kind of, so just working through and having, being very vulnerable. So.
I get it. Okay.
So this, yeah. Yeah, but right. Thanks everybody for your chats because it helps me in the meantime.
Okay, good. As long as there's some value there. Okay, we got another like at least 5 minutes. Does anybody else want to follow up on anything? You know, another thing I'd like to do is just what are some key takeaways? What are some key takeaways from this call? If nobody has anything else, just want to hear what people noticed.
For myself, is that reminder to ask. Just to, because that does make a huge difference. Just pausing to phase those questions, and you do get a different response.
Great. Who else?
I think for me, when you were talking about connecting with people's deeper commitments, that's how I would put it. I had forgotten that, frankly, or just, you know, I'm just motoring through, let's, you know, do the day-to-day tasks well and be profitable. But that really had not been consciously connecting with an inspiring mission, you know, for people or for, you know, or for the organization. So that was a useful reminder.
Good. Yeah. Module one has a lot of great tools on how to build and design that for an organization too. Awesome. Who else? Key takeaways.
As fresh as it is, and I'm still in the middle of learning all the Enneagram personalities that that my one keeps coming back up, and you know, and it's always on my mind that it can be overbearing or theoretical. And yours, what I wrote down, so you know, starting from empathy, which was already stated there, but I'm actually already talking about it with one of my soon-to-be chiefs, and as a reminder that there's different viewpoints. It's how it's absorbed. They have to be ready and staged to absorb it and understand it. And it can't be force-fed as much as I want to. So I guess that's my biggest struggle is painting the stage, creating the stage to learn, to want to grow.
The thing that's hard about being a one is not just that you think you're right, but you're often right.
Don't say that.
Ones really are often right. They not always. They're flawed human beings like all of us, but they really do have a kind of a sense sometimes that there is a better way to do something, and they're often right. And that's why it's so hard for ones to stay curious. And I would say that's the key for you to play with is empathy and curiosity. Curiosity is just that wondering. Wonder what other way could be happening, or wonder what that person thinks about or wants, or I wonder what, you know, I'm already clear on the ideology and the ideal and this perfected state. I already know all that, and I even know the path to get there. I know all the right answers, but I need to get curious about those things that I can't know, like what other people need, want, what they're motivated by, what they're afraid of. That kind of stuff. So that empathy and curiosity is a great way to play with the one in you.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Yeah, you bet.
I love the blue light behind you, the new addition there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's my halo.
Yes.
Jason, can I just say your commitment to this process, impressive.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I hope I don't get lost in it.
No, your investment in this process is impressive.
Totally.
It's very it's been evident every single week that you're completely bought in, all in for it, and that you're not half-hearted. And so just saying, it's not normal, not even in this group. It's unusual. So
it is, and he's getting results because of it. That's the other thing. I'm with you, Tim. I agree. And he's seeing results. It's been awesome. It's been inspiring.
Good job, man.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, I think that's it for everybody. Thanks again for the time. We will look forward to seeing you next week. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, Shane.
See ya.
See ya.